A Midwestern family gathers for one last Christmas, but the real drama isn't about holiday cheer, it's about survival. The Lamberts represent a particular slice of American life, hardworking, stoic, deeply flawed, and desperately trying to hold together as the world they built crumbles. Alfred, the retired railroad engineer and family patriarch, is losing his battle with Parkinson's disease. His wife Enid clings to the fantasy that if she can just get their three adult children home for the holidays, everything will somehow be made right. But their children have scattered across the country, each carrying wounds from a childhood marked by emotional distance and rigid expectations. What unfolds is a portrait of family dysfunction so precise and unsparing that it feels uncomfortably familiar, because every family has its own version of the Lambert story, where love and resentment become so entangled they're impossible to separate. Alfred built his life on discipline, rationality, and self-denial. As an engineer, he valued precision and control. As a father, he provided financial security, but emotional emptiness. Now, Parkinson's disease is systematically dismantling everything he spent a lifetime constructing. His hands shake uncontrollably. He hallucinates talking turds that mock him from the toilet. His mind, once sharp enough to develop railroad patents, betrays him with increasing frequency. Alfred's decline dismantles a man defined by self-mastery. His rigid principles made him a reliable provider, yet inaccessible father. His children rebelled against suffocating values that nonetheless gave Alfred dignity to face disintegration without complaint. His basement workshop, once his sanctuary, becomes a chaotic reminder of deteriorating capabilities. When he finally stops eating, his last act of autonomy is both heartbreaking and triumphant, a final assertion of will from a man who valued nothing more than self-determination. Enid embodies desperate optimism confronting decades of disappointment. Married to an emotionally unavailable man, she channels frustrated desires into maintaining appearances and controlling what she can. Her children's lives, family reputation, the perfect holiday gathering. Her fixation on one last family Christmas grows frantic as Alfred worsens, transforming from simple wish to all-consuming need. Her handbag symbolizes her perfectly stuffed, with hoarded sugar packets and outdated coupons, just as she clings to disproven family fantasies. Intelligent but confined to domestic roles, her energies turn toward critiquing her children's choices and hiding uncomfortable truths from neighbors. Gary has everything his father valued, banking career, Philadelphia home, wife, three sons, yet fights unacknowledged depression. His marriage to Caroline has become psychological warfare. When he suspects her of manipulating their sons, she suggests he's paranoid, a depression symptom. This creates a perfect trap. Protesting confirms his illness. In one darkly comic scene, Gary drinks three martinis while counting them as two, proving Caroline's point through self-deception. Gary deliberately cultivates non-ambition to avoid his father's workaholic patterns, leaving him stuck in middle management at Centrist. His crisis peaks when, drunk and desperate to prove competence, he attempts trimming hedges from a ladder and deeply cuts his thumb, physical evidence of his deteriorating state. What makes Gary's predicament so affecting is how his legitimate grievances become indistinguishable from paranoia, leaving both him and readers uncertain where reality ends and depression begins. The middle Lambert child embodies intellectual rebellion against Midwestern values. With a PhD in critical theory from Yale, Chip loses his tenure-track position at D College after an affair with student Melissa Paquette. Now in New York, he works for Lithuanian crime boss Gitanas while writing a screenplay he believes will vindicate him. Chip satirizes academic leftism's disconnect from reality. His dissertation on commodity fetishism becomes darkly ironic when he develops a compulsive obsession with expensive designer clothes and gourmet foods he cannot afford. In one memorable scene, he attempts to steal salmon by hiding it down his pants at an upscale market, only to have it slip down his leg in public, a literal manifestation of his moral collapse. What elevates Chip beyond caricature is his gradual self-awareness. His sophisticated critiques of capitalism prove powerless against its material seductions, just as rejecting his father's values doesn't free him from desperately seeking Alfred's approval. His redemption comes through reluctant reconnection with family, removing his rebellious earrings, falling in love with a pragmatic neurologist, fathering twins, eventually marrying in a Jewish ceremony. The youngest Lambert channels her mother's domestic skills into culinary artistry as a successful Philadelphia chef, yet wrestles with sexual identity. Her marriage to older restaurant owner Emile Berger crumbles under power imbalances, followed by intense affairs with both men and women, particularly boss's wife Becky and later Robin, revealing a pattern of seeking forbidden connections. As a chef, she creates pleasure for others while struggling to define her own. What distinguishes Denise is her remarkable empathy, especially toward Alfred. While Gary approaches their father with resentment and Chip with rejection, Denise maintains a tender, understanding connection even as his mind deteriorates. Her creation of the Generator Restaurant, transforming an industrial building symbolically linked to Alfred's railroad career into a culinary temple, represents a bold reimagining that honors industrial heritage while forging something distinctly modern. The Correctel process, a fictional medical technology based on Alfred's underpaid patent work, promises to correct neurological disorders by strengthening active neural pathways while ignoring idle ones. In a darkly comic investor presentation, CEO Merrily Finch promotes applications for Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and criminal rehabilitation. When challenged on reprogramming criminals' brains, she dismisses ethical concerns, calling it voluntary self-melioration. The technology's mechanism, helping the rich get richer, mirrors economic systems rewarding the privileged while ignoring those without resources. Each Lambert responds differently. Gary sees missed profit, Denise, potential treatment for Alfred and guilt relief, Alfred, culmination of uncompensated work. Their reactions reflect individual struggles with control, raising fundamental questions about whether we can truly correct ourselves or whether we're inevitably shaped by biology and upbringing. When Alfred stops eating, his final assertion of control, the family discovers unexpected liberation. Chip stays with Enid for 6 weeks, building the conventional life that would have pleased his father. Gary finds peace acknowledging his depression and seeking treatment, something Alfred never managed. Demise moves forward with more honest relationships, balancing ambition with vulnerability. Most significantly, Enid discovers freedom in widowhood, slowly shedding restrictions that defined her married life. She travels independently, redecorates to her taste, even considers dating, activities unthinkable under Alfred's rigid framework. When she discovers the antidepressant Aslan, she experiences brief liberation from anxiety and shame, glimpsing desires beyond social constraints. Alfred's absence ultimately frees her, a sad yet triumphant revelation that at 75, she might finally discover possibilities beyond the narrow confines that defined her existence. The corrections aren't perfect solutions, but adjustments allowing life to continue with greater authenticity. The family's dysfunction isn't magically resolved, but its members accommodate differences while maintaining connection. We inherit our parents' wounds and worldviews, but we're not condemned to repeat them. The real correction isn't fixing what's broken, it's accepting imperfection while choosing, again and again, to stay connected despite everything that pulls us apart.